to Comic Talk Today for Thursday, March 28th, 2019. Hello. Back recording. It's nice. I had a great weekend this past weekend. I went to Chicago with the C2E2 2019. Got to hang out with a large chunk of the Nerd Legion crew. It was great. There were people there I'd never met, so that was nice to see as well. I met Jim from the Collective Valiant podcast. I met Travis from Aftershock, and who else did I meet? Well, Jay and Dennis, of course, from Best of the Rest, and then, you know, Ronnie was there, Nick, and everybody. So that was great. It was a great time. If you haven't checked those podcasts out, then do so, because they're great. I want to talk about my C2E2 experience a little bit, and why maybe you should go. I don't know about next year. I'm still trying to figure out if I'm going to go next year. The con next year is going to be February 28th through March 1st. And that is peak snow season in Chicago. So that's tough because I like to drive, and I drive every year. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I had a great time. If you've never been to a big con, I think the big con is a different experience than a smaller con. So I do SC Comic Con, which is local to me. I do NC Comic Con in Charlotte. I do Heroes in Charlotte. I do NC Comic Con in Raleigh. And Heroes in Charlotte. And, you know, NC Comic Con is actually a smaller con as well. Heroes is pretty big, but it's got a small con feel, and that's pretty nice. C2E2 is much bigger, but I think this year was actually really interesting. It was very well laid out, I thought. Much better than the last time I went. When I went two years ago, the aisles were much smaller. It felt like everyone was kind of packed in there. And there was definitely more aisle space. There were, I think, more vendors, I would say. Smaller booths, so more vendors. And I don't know if that was done on purpose, but I thought that was pretty enjoyable. I didn't get to see the entire con. In fact, I was talking to Nick about this last night and on the Nerd Legion podcast, and that's out today if you want to listen. If you want comics talk, by the way, just skip the first hour. But the first hour is funny, so you should listen. And I started an artist alley on aisle Z, which is the last aisle, and ended up just doing like 5 or 6 aisles. I didn't even do the entire thing because I spent a bunch of time in an artist vendor booth, and that was good. That was good. I ended up getting a lot of stuff, and I put some pictures up on Twitter, so check those out. But there's something about a big con, and in particular if you do a big con with friends. I think that's probably the key to having a fun and successful con experience. And, you know, you can take a look at going to cons in many different ways, right? So when I go to SC Comic Con, for example, I usually take my kids. So the types of activities that I have at SC Comic Con are very different than when I go to Chicago, when I'm just hanging out with a bunch of friends. I do recommend both. I mean, if you have kids, you should be taking them to your convention. I mean, as people that love comics, and I assume if you listen to this podcast, you love comics, I think it's very important to get your kids involved in some way. They may not always enjoy what you enjoy, but to have them at least partake in the culture, I think is a good eye-opening experience. So definitely take your kids to a con. But of course, if you have little kids, and I mean, I have an 8-year-old and a 15-year-old, so they're not like little, but I couldn't leave my 8-year-old alone, for example, to wander around the con, right? So the types of things that I can do is different. There's panels that I can't go to because my kids get bored at the panels. There's things that I couldn't do, like I couldn't go long box diving, for example, because my kids would get bored if I'm just flipping through boxes of comics. But it's still fun. And you do get to see a different side of the con with your kids than you do with your friends. Now, there were a lot of us. I think there were 10 of us, 11 of us that got together to go to C2E2. And of course, not everyone wanders around together. But the cool thing about that is that you have a little bit more freedom to do so. And just by the simple fact that you have people that you know and care about with you at a big convention like this, number one, you're able to do things that you might not have time to do, for example. So I could not go to every single panel that I wanted to go. But by having friends that actually go and experience those panels, you're able to get a little more of the con experience because you get to hear a little bit more about what's going on, things that you didn't see. Of course, it can be a little troublesome if you take your friends with you because sometimes you might be, we'll say enticed to buy stuff that you weren't expecting. I didn't buy anything I didn't want to buy, but I did make at least one friend, matter of fact, I think two or three, buy things that they weren't planning on buying. And that's fine. That's fine as well. You know, I think, by having a large group of people like this where we get together and go to this con, you're able to kind of break out of the stuff that you just simply like, right? So we've got a couple guys in the group that are just straight Valiant fans, right? Everything they want is Valiant stuff. And that's fantastic. But that's not the only side of comics, right? So I had one friend actually ended up buying, matter of fact, Duan from also the Collecting Valiant podcast and soon to be, the Valiant Central podcast. We'll talk about that later. He ended up buying this amazing piece, double page spread from executive assistant Iris. I think that was a Titans comic, if I'm not mistaken, and a comic he'd never read, but it was a beautiful piece of art. So somehow or other, I kind of talked him into buying it and he really enjoyed the piece. So I think that's a great addition to his collection. But just simply the fact that you have friends that can help you dive through boxes or look through art or go to panels with you where you can actually talk about what you heard in those panels, I think is also important. And yeah, we all basically do podcasts, so that kind of helps. And at some point, I'm sure, for example, like me and Ronnie talked about the Aftershock panel last night a little bit. And it can help you kind of analyze some of that information that was given, right? So you do get the additional things. So I highly recommend, if you do end up going to a big con like this, take at least a friend or two with you. For one, it'll help expenditure costs for sure. I mean, we had 10 people sharing a penthouse, so it ended up being pretty inexpensive to actually be there. And then you have a great time. Maybe too good a time, as a matter of fact. I'm still trying to recuperate from this past weekend. But it was great. So I'm definitely going to be doing it again. Highly recommended. I know that big cons can be a little more tedious to prepare for, right? I mean, you have to travel, you have to find a place to stay, things like that. But it is definitely well worth it. So don't skip out on that. And if you don't have any comic book friends, make some comic book friends. I mean, the folks that I went to Chicago with, I met all through podcasting, for example, or through Twitter. So there's definitely places where you can meet people and forge really good relationships that can last a long time. I mean, I've known most of these guys for years, and I know I'm not the only one, right? Mike Myers was there from Geek Brunch, and Bill Bomer was there from Geek Brunch. Bill, of course, is local. Mike came from Colorado Springs. And, I mean, those guys met through the podcast. We met them through the podcast. Mike's got a group of friends that he's met through cons and forums and things like that as well. So I think that's important. I think one of the great things about the comic book industry, I guess we'll just say, is the amount of relationships you can forge, not just making new friends, but in meeting creators. And, you know, I did get to meet a few creators that I've only spoken to on Twitter or on a podcast before, like David Peepos and Erica Schultz. And they're amazing. They're amazing. Because you get a different side of the comic, right? When you're just reading comics, really all you're seeing is what their mind is creating in this particular book. But when you actually meet these people, you realize they're people just like you, right? And I think oftentimes people forget that. And maybe smaller creators is a little different for some people. You can be like, oh, well, I could never talk to Scott Snyder or Marv Wolfman or George Perez or guys like that, Chris Claremont. But you can, because you know what? They're going to these cons to meet fans. And yes, they're going to the cons to make money as well, okay? Let's not kid ourselves. They're there to make money. But they want to promote their projects. And they are genuinely interested in talking to fans. In particular, fans that aren't just there to get signatures, to sell something on eBay, or, you know, to complain about something. I mean, I'm sure they're somewhat okay with some of the complaining. But for the most part, I think people that want to meet these creators aren't doing it to badmouth them. I would hope not, at least. Not in person. Most people don't have the balls to do that, to be honest. And they really would only do it on Twitter. So, that's a great part of the con. And if you have a creator that you want to talk to, then don't be afraid to go to the booth and talk to them. You need to figure out, of course, the best time to do so, because sometimes some of these guys will have long lines, right? So I mentioned some big names. Those guys always have lines. I don't think I've ever seen Snyder at a booth per se. Every time I've seen Snyder, he was kind of off to the side, not quite in like the actors section, you know, the autograph section, But he's kind of off to the side. He's got a bigger booth. And so maybe they do make it a little more intimidating. But, you know, for example, this past weekend, Marv Wolfman and Chris Claremont were in the same aisle right across from each other. Both of those guys had lines, I would say, 50 yards long the entire weekend. And I'm sure that's exhausting for these guys, you know, especially getting up in an older age. But surely they had a good time. And hopefully the people that went there and talked to these guys actually had some constructive things to say. Some praise for the work that they have done, because they've been in the industry for a long time. And you know, at SC Comic Con a couple of weeks ago, for example, I got to meet Snyder for the first time, because I hadn't seen him before. But like Greg Capullo was there, which I had met previously. As a matter of fact, I met Greg Capullo at a hotel bar, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago. He was great. You know, Neil Adams I've met in a hotel bar. He was great. His wife was fantastic. So those things can happen. It's just how you want your con experience to go. I think oftentimes people get a little too tied down when they go to cons, and that's where they want to go and find old books and, you know, go to panels and buy toys and trinkets and whatever. And that's fine if that's what you want out of the con experience. But this is the first con that I've ever been to, and I probably do 3 or 4 a year. It's the first kind of been to that I had literally zero plans to do anything. Usually I bring a bag with me in case I buy books or whatever. I didn't do any of that. I just showed up to the con and just let myself enjoy what was around me. And I think for that reason, I enjoyed this con a little bit more. Now, yes, I did have a few more drinks than I normally do at a con. That is very true. You can hear stories about that on the Nerd Legion podcast. But aside from that, I think not having a plan really frees you up to partake more in what a con is about. So I definitely recommend that. Head out to a big con like C2E2 or WonderCon, ECC. I don't know about San Diego might be even too big for most people. I know that maybe it's like a mecca kind of thing for some folks where they have to go to San Diego one time. That's fine. I don't ever plan on attending San Diego. But if you're that kind of person, then by all means, I think you do get a different kind of experience. And definitely engrossing yourself in a particular culture that you really love. And I love comics. I love every comic. I love all genres of comics. Well, that's not true. I mean, there's comics that I don't like. But, you know, I love comics as a medium. And I love people that work in comics, because even folks whose books maybe I don't necessarily like, if you happen to meet those people, then they actually have some really interesting to say. I mean, you can learn a lot about the comic industry. In particular, if you're doing like a one-on-one thing, right? If there's no long line, they're just hanging out, and you strike up a conversation, and they feel like what you're saying is interesting, you build some rapport, you might get some interesting stories that you've never heard on comic book websites or on podcasts before. And that's cool to see as well, because it does make the comic book industry much more personal. And regardless of how big some of these cons is, you got to remember comics is still a very small industry, right? I mean, sure, we have new publishers coming out left and right. You know, we've talked about Ahoy recently. I went to the TKO panel. T. Jung was there. He was fantastic. That's a really interesting company to me. Of course, Aftershock I love. And there's more coming out all the time. I mean, Lion Forge is about to reboot the line with Gail Simone. There's always more and more publishers coming out. And yes, there are always people entering the industry, but there's also people leaving. And so you can remember, as big as comics may seem, it's still a very small affair, even after, you know, 80 plus years of comics. So I think that's pretty interesting. So definitely check that out. Again, go to my Twitter at Geekvine. You can see some of the stuff that I bought. I got my first CGC comic. Matter of fact, I bought two, and I really love the purchase that I got. The art that I got, I think, is fantastic. I have this beautiful Black Bolt Kong the Conqueror page that might be my new favorite thing ever. It's just like a classic page, and I really enjoyed it. So make it worth your while. If you do a big con, be prepared to save some money to spend. Luckily, I have a credit card I haven't used ever, so that funded my purchases. But yeah, it was a great time. Great time. Highly recommend it. Next year, again, it's February 28th through the 1st, and it is a leap year, so it's not 2 days. It's 3 days, because there's a February 29th next year. But we'll see. I haven't decided if I'm going to go yet next year. I'll figure that out as we get closer to the convention. I'm still trying to figure out if I'm going to go to Heroes this year. We'll see. The thing about Heroes is when I go to Heroes, I go with my kids as well, because it's only, you know, an hour and a half away. And I do get to see some friends, right? So like Mike Myers usually goes, or Daryl Taylor, Chris Campbell, those guys. But it's a little different, in particular, having my kids with me. So we'll see. But make some plans. Make some plans to go to a nice size con. I know Baltimore here is great. From my understanding, Baltimore is very similar to Heroes. So if you're on the East Coast, I'm going to recommend Heroes. But you let me know what kind of cons you go to and what you enjoy. And usually what you plan on doing at a con. Again, I only attended a couple panels. I saw a Gene Ha live art thing at the sci-fi panel or the sci-fi booth. And I thought that was really cool. I've seen some of these live drawing things before. And which one did I see? The Lee Weeks and Garcia Lopez I saw a couple years ago at Heroes. They're really great if the moderator knows how to handle the time between the person drawing and answering questions. But it's great to see a really great artist drawing live on stage. And then, of course, I saw the Aftershock panel, as I said. Interesting stuff there. We talked about some of it on the Aftershock Central podcast, so check that out. We went to the TKO panel, and it was just Z, nobody else. But that guy is really interesting. You know, sometimes when you have new publishers coming in, you wonder kind of what's the intent here, right? Like, are you actually here to make comics, or do you just want to put books out to make movies? You know, Z and the crew seem like they're really, really legit and really genuine about the kind of work that they want to do. They announced, they've been announced before, but he showed off some stuff about the upcoming line from TKO. There's a Jeff Lemire book that I'm very excited for. You can pre-order all those books now. I think the second wave of books is coming in the next, I want to say, month or two. And I think the way that they're doing their comics is really interesting. They're bypassing Diamond, for one, which I think is pretty ballsy because nobody else bypasses Diamond. So they sell directly to shops. And I think that's great for shops because the shops keep 50% of what they pay for, as opposed to a comic that they're getting from Diamond, in which they might get, you know, 25 cents, 50 cents, a dollar maybe on whatever they're selling. I mean, 50 cents, you're getting $2 a comic. And sure, it's a small publisher, but, you know, if you're recouping that interest, that's a pretty good deal. They also sell them in multiple formats, so you can get them single issues. You can get the single issues in a box set, which is really cool looking. It also helps me put them up where I keep my trades on the shelf, so that's nice. And then you can get them in paperback. I had thought that I had purchased mine as a hardcover. I was talking to Ronnie about that. I was like, why doesn't he have the hardcovers? And when I looked them up later on, I realized that's because I didn't buy a hardcover. I bought paperbacks. So, yeah, there's multiple ways of doing that. And I think they put out some really interesting books. In the first line, there's two that he wrote. There's one by Garth Ennis and one by Josh Adarsart. They're all really fantastic. I really enjoyed Seven Deadly Sins. It's probably one of the only Westerns on the market. But it's really well done, really well done. Again, same with Aftershock. You know, we've known those guys for years, and that panel was great. Seeing Stephanie Phillips there was actually really cool. I saw her at a writer's panel in SC Comic Con a few weeks ago, and it was Kyle Starks, Robin Diddy, and Stephanie, and Bridget Connell. And she was great there. She had some great stories to tell. And what I like about her is she's kind of an up-and-comer, right? She was found through the Top Cow Talent Hunt search that they do every year. And now she's got like 5 books that she's working on. I think only 1 or 2 have been announced. But I'm very excited for her work. And if you ever get to meet her, she's fantastic, right? And she's really excited because she's kind of new, right? I mean, there's people in the comics industry that are still excited about what they do. There's tons of those. But there's something about like a new writer that seems to really be getting like hitting well with publishers that you can sense the passion in them, right? But they're not like big mega stars, so you can talk to them in a particular way that's more relatable. Sometimes some of the success goes to creators' heads, right? And I'm obviously not going to name any specific names, but I've seen this many times. And I've seen this even with smaller creators that are up and coming. And once they get like a big Marvel or DC gig, they're just like, who are you? I can't remember you. Again, not going to name that. By the way, not Zach and Lonnie, in case anybody that listens to my shows regularly know. Zach and Lonnie, still fantastic. I'm trying to think outside of that. I don't know. It was good. It was great. It was great. I got home Monday of our lunchtime. I went to sleep. And then Tuesday I wake up and people are super upset about this Zack Snyder thing. And I don't understand it. If you ever get a chance, I'll see if I can put a link in the show notes to what Snyder said. But there was a panel and it wasn't even like a Justice League thing. He was mostly talking about Watchmen and some of his other work. But he started talking about Batman. I think maybe somebody asked him about Batman Superman. A movie which you guys know if you listen regularly, I love. I love that movie. I think it's really highly underrated. Especially the extended director's cut, I think is brilliant. Because I think it addresses some of the issues that people had in the theatrical release. So, if you've only seen the theatrical, go do yourself a favor and watch that. I mean, it's longer. It's like 3 hours. And there's only a couple scenes, right? And they're very short scenes that are in that theatrical release that weren't in the, or in the director's cut that weren't in the theatrical. But they really make a difference in the storytelling. And I know that people kind of crap on Snyder sometimes for the, what he was doing in these movies, right? Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Justice League. But I'm convinced that was Snyder allowed to do exactly what he had set out to do, those movies would have done much better, even if maybe they didn't necessarily align with what DC and Warner Brothers wanted to do. But he was talking about these things, and he mentioned something about Batman killing. And, of course, I come back on Twitter on Tuesday, and everyone's talking about, how dare you, Batman doesn't kill, this, that, and the other. And I found that really curious, because some of those people complaining were people in the industry, writers, creators, artists, some that have been in the industry a very long time. And it had me curious, because I've read a lot of Batman, and I've read the majority of the Golden Age stuff, and Batman does kill. So I was a little confused because, I mean, my initial reaction is, well, have you ever read a Batman comic? I mean, if you read a Batman comic in the last, whatever, 30, 40 years, then sure, he hasn't killed. But have you ever gone back and read Golden Age stuff? I mean, the first few issues of it, Batman was killing people left and right. I had a count at one point. There's one issue where he kills like 19 people. He's just like throwing dudes out the window left and right. He shoots a couple guys because he had a gun in the first couple of issues of the series of Detective. And I'm like, have you ever read these comics? Do you understand kind of the basis for why this comic is being done in this way? Right? You got to remember, Batman came out in 39. And by the way, May 39, not March 39. So it's not the 80th anniversary yet. But whatever. That's something that irked me. I'll talk about that later. And, I mean, he killed. Have you read those comics? I mean, you can get Batman Golden Age Omnibuy, right? They're available. They might be out of reach financially for some people, but they're available. I'm sure you can get them on Comixology for cheap. You can go to your library and get them and read them. I highly recommend you do, because it's a very different Batman. And if you're reading those things, you get to see the evolution of what this character would eventually become. But those seeds are kind of interspersed. You get a little bit in this issue, a little bit in that issue, a little bit in that issue, and you keep working and building and building. And you can see how we have the character we have now. But when someone says Batman doesn't kill, well, maybe now, or at least for now. But of course he has. Of course he has. Most heroes have killed at some point in their history. And I think to say that is kind of, you know, Mike Myers always talks about everything matters on his podcast, right? And that's one thing I love about Mike is I think Mike really understands comics. Like really, really understands comics. And when you take that kind of philosophy, you do get to see a bigger picture of storytelling in comics. Because everything does matter, right? Even if it seems like it doesn't. I remember a few years ago, I don't know how many of you listening to this have read like Multiversity, for example, but there were things that popped up in Multiversity. There were things that popped up in like Morrison's All-Star Superman that you read it and you're like, okay, like this is awesome, but like what does this have to do with anything? Right? When am I ever going to see this? And Morrison gets a bad rap because he's got some really interesting ideas in his head. And I think sometimes people don't fully grasp what he's trying to say also, until maybe much later. And then when, right before Bendis took over, there was a really cool story arc. And there were elements in that story arc that were taken directly out of, like, All-Star Superman, definitely Multiversity, because you had some of these alternate universe Superman showing up. And I was fascinated by it. And I wondered, what are people thinking about this? Because I've read these books, so I understand where we're coming from, how we got here, how we can tell the story. But what about people that didn't read All-Star because it's Morrison and they hate him? Or didn't read Multiversity, well, for the same reason. Or because they don't want these, like, crazy, intertangled, multiverse kind of stories. How do they feel about this story? They're going to think it just came out of nowhere, because they don't understand it. And it's the same thing with this thing. Batman doesn't kill. Well, he doesn't kill now, but he did at one point. And that's important, and it's been a part of the character's history. It's something that's been tackled by other creators over the years in different and interesting ways. And I know, I haven't read it yet, but I know Detective Comics has a story, I believe by Jim Lee, in which he, from what I understand, he melts down the gun that he used in those early tech issues to make the Batman symbol. I think that's awesome. Is it a retcon-y kind of thing? Maybe. But it makes everything matter, right? Because it's a direct callback to those early stories. And I'm sure that there's people reading that book, they're like, why the hell's he melting this gun? What's the point of this? I'll tell you what the point of it. Go read some Golden Age Batman, then you'll understand. And it's hard. I know Nick and I talk about this quite often on Nerdy Legion. He fully believes in the every issue should be someone's first issue. And I don't. I don't. Because I think, not necessarily because it's not feasible, but because I feel like there are creators that can't fully understand how to make that work for a large audience, right? And by large audience, I mean old readers and new readers. If you're writing every single comic for somebody that has never read that comic before, you're kind of undermining the people that have been with this character for a long time, right? So you can't just make everything be someone's first issue, right? There are particular personality traits that characters have gained over time that are a direct result of events that happened to them previously, right? So like when Detective relaunched in Rebirth, there was a lot of stuff going on with Batman not being sure if he wanted to let this team on their own. Some of the team felt like he was kind of babysitting them, that kind of thing. And there's reasons for that, right? I mean, think about, for example, when Jason Todd was killed. I know that's kind of a whole controversial thing, but when Jason Todd was killed, how much of that was discussed within the books? I mean, there was, of course, repercussions. But there should still be repercussions because this is the same character. Regardless of the fact that we've had, multiple relaunches by this point of these characters, that history is still there. And there are a ton of people, especially now in comics, because comics right now is largely an adult industry where people reading comics have been reading comics for years, decades even, or longer. Is anyone reading comics over 100? Maybe. But there's a ton of those people. The majority of the market is driven by folks, I mean, I would say roughly my age and up. Because for one, you have disposable income to buy comics and buy more comics, right? When I was a kid, I couldn't buy 40 books a week. I don't buy 40 books a week anymore. I do like 20, 25. So we'll just go with that. I mean, I couldn't do 20 books a week. I could do maybe 3, 4, 5. And comics were much cheaper back then. Now you're looking at $3.99 is the average price on a book. You have books coming out all the time at $5.99, $7.99, $9.99. That's impossible for a kid unless their parents buying it for them. My parents didn't buy me comics. I had to earn money to go and buy my comics. And how much money can you earn when you're 8, 9, 10 years old? You see what I'm saying? So a lot of people driving right now are people in the age range that allows them to have the income to do so. And yes, there are definitely kids reading comics. There's definitely teens reading comics. But the amount of kids and teens doing so on their own and finding a way to fund it on their own is much, much smaller than it used to be. Much smaller. Right now, those kids are probably kids of parents who still buy comics, for the most part. Right? I mean, I'm overgeneralizing, I know. But for the most part, that's the case. And of course it shows. I mean, it shows in the sales numbers. You know, this past month, there was only one book over 100,000 copies. That was the Batman Who Laughs. Good book. But, you know, when you have 500-600 comics coming out every month, to see only one book make that kind of big hit is crazy, right? Back in the day, if you were selling 100,000 copies of a comic, your comic was canceled. Because there were comics selling 5, 6, 7, 1 million, 2 million copies. So you can write to bring new readers in. And that's maybe part of the reason why there's so many relaunches. But I think they're realizing you can't have this many relaunches. Because you're alienating people that have been there for the long time. That actually support the industry. And you know, he had some interesting stuff to say. And he said, like Batman killed that guy. I'm like, wake the F up, Snyder said. So I guess that's what I'm talking about. Once you've lost your virginity to this effing movie, and then you come and say to me things like, my superhero wouldn't do that. I'm like, are you serious? I'm like down the effing road on that. You know what I mean? I agree completely. This happens all the time. I mean, I've done it, right? It's not like I'm not even talking about myself. I've done it. I do it with Batman now. I do it with Batman now. Everyone knows I'm up and down on the current Batman run. There's issues that I like. There's issues that I don't like. There's issues that I hate. I'm not sure if there's been any issues that I loved. But, I mean, I basically hated the first 49 issues. And I think since then, it's been probably about 50-50 for me. Maybe 40-60 on what I like and don't like. So we're making progress. I don't know if it's like finally breaking into me, making me understand, but we all do this kind of thing, right? Sometimes we feel like we take ownership of these characters, even though obviously we don't. You know, DC owns them, Marvel owns them, Image, whatever. Somebody owns them, but they're not our comics. But that's just the way people work, right? And I guarantee you, if you go around and you ask any of your comic book reading friends, hey, what's your favorite superhero? The first answer to pop into their mind will be probably the first one they ever read. Not always the case. Mine is actually not the first one I read. First one I read was Captain America. But I mean, I love Cap for a long time. I still read Cap. I still enjoy Cap. The second book I read was Avengers, so I was a huge Vision fan. I still love Vision. Matter of fact, I really enjoyed Tom King Vision, even though it was extremely different. But then I found Batman, and that's kind of where I settled in. But for most people, that's kind of how it is. It's like that whole argument with The Flash, right? Are you a Wally guy or a Barry guy? It depends on when you started reading the comics. Or the Green Lantern thing. If there's plenty of people that love Kyle. I am one of those people because when I first read Green Lantern, Kyle was the Green Lantern. And I love that character. So seeing some of these other guys, I'm like, all right, not for me, but they're good. So think about that kind of thing before you start just saying the stupidest things. I mean, the problem is, here's the problem. If this, of course, would never happen in real life because it's really unfeasible. But let's say instead of Twitter, we had, like a public forum like they had back in the old Roman days, right? Where you can go to the public forum and talk about, you know, with other people in your town about news and, you know, what Aunt Hilda did and what comics you bought and, you know, sharing recipes or whatever. Let's say it was that instead of Twitter or Facebook or whatever. The conversation would be very different. It would be very different, right? Because for one, you don't have the personal face-to-face interaction. And that's, again, why I recommend you go to a big con with friends, okay? Because you'll find interesting stuff not only about the con and the comics, but about your friends and about yourself. But that personal interaction definitely helps. With Twitter, you don't have any of that, right? Or Facebook, whatever. I mean, you might have your little picture on the sidebar. You may have your name on it. I think most people don't use their real names. I do. I always have Martin something, right? Either first name, last name, or Martin is doing this, or Martin, or usually right now it's been Martin Loves Comics. And there are people that put their full name, okay? Some people don't. That's fine. You do it however you want to do it. I'm not knocking you on that. But, you know, the anonymity kind of takes away from having a legitimate conversation. And I know that maybe that's one reason why Twitter tried to do the more characters thing, and that's fine. But they want more legitimate conversation, right? You don't really have that. You just have people making snide comments like, oh, how dare you? Oh, my Batman doesn't do that. My Flash doesn't do that. Oh, I prefer this one over that one because that one sucks. Those aren't constructive criticisms, right? It's just a way for you to vent your emotions. If you want to really be constructive, what you need to do is be very direct and explain why you're being the way that you're being, okay? Don't say Batman wouldn't do that. Tell me why, because have you read every single Batman issue? I guarantee you, you haven't. As much as I love Batman, I have not read every single issue. Now, I've read hundreds, thousands maybe, of books with Batman, starring Batman, or Batman as a whatever, a supporting character. So I feel pretty good when I say, don't be an idiot, Batman does do that. And then, you know, things may happen where it changes, and things that Batman used to not do, he does now, like cry and be sad. Sorry, Daryl, that was a joke for you, okay? My bad. That wasn't a jab in any way whatsoever. I think the problem is, oftentimes, we don't want to do the work, right? We don't want to do the work. People are lazy. Let's be honest, okay? I'm talking to you listening right now. Let's be honest. You're lazy. I'm lazy. You remember being in high school? I mean, if you're about my age, you may remember this. You're in high school, and you're in English class, and you're assigned The Grapes of Wrath. And you're like, God, that book's like 1,000 pages. I'm not reading that. I'm going to go find the Cliff Notes in the library. And like, yeah, you're going to understand. You're going to have some grasp of what happens in The Grapes of Wrath or Ulysses. I mean, one of the hardest books to read in the English language. You're going to have some grasp of what happened, right? It'll be told to you. But by you not having directly experienced that, you're not really going to know what's going on. You're going to have some peripheral understanding. And we do this all the time. We do this all the time. If I go in the kitchen and I want to wash my dishes in the sink, and I turn the faucet on and start washing my dishes, I don't think about how the water gets from an aquifer or whatever to my sink. I just turn on the sink and go. Okay. All I know is that there is water in that faucet, and when I turn the little knob or push the little button, water comes out. That's what I know. And nothing else is relevant to me. And that may work for a stupid task like washing dishes, but it doesn't always work with a comic book. And this varies with comic books. I did not expect to do this conversation, by the way. So I apologize to anybody listening. This was not my plan at all, but it just came to me, so we're going to talk about it. When you're reading a comic book, there's different comics that have to be read differently, right? And I've talked about this when I do like The Top of the Pop, for example. There's always that like book that's like a palate cleanser, right? It's not saying anything. It's not deep and meaningful. It doesn't have a crazy complicated story, multi-part, multi-tier. It's just a simple story, okay? Dude's at work. There's a robbery. He finds out he's got superpowers. He defeats the bad guys. Great action sequence. Double page spread. The end. I mean, that's kind of the basic structure of most comics anyway. But there are some comics that are literally just that. Literally just that. Nothing else. And there are comics that are extremely complicated. And I'm going to do it again. I know you're waiting on it. If I go and read a Grant Morrison book, I just heard a dozen people turn the podcast off. If I go read a Grant Morrison book, if I'm reading Invincibles, or Invisibles, not Invincibles, different book, Invisibles, and I read the first issue, it just seems like a pretty standard comic. I mean, maybe some magical stuff going on, some weird stuff, but it seems like a pretty standard comic. And then I get to issue 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, things start building up. Then all of a sudden I get to like 15, 16, 17, and there's like some crazy stuff popping in. And then I get to issue like 40, and I have callbacks to what happened in issue 1, and how that connected to issue 9, and how that connected to 27. And then it's not so simple, right? Because I could not be told that. And if I don't have the experience and the knowledge necessary to understand what it is that I'm reading, and go back and understand how it all ties together, and understand how this page is put together, and why this panel was done in this way, and why the colorist chose this particular color, I'm not going to understand any of that. And that's, of course, I've said this before many times, because I believe in equal opportunity alienation. That's why I usually don't read comic book reviews. And if you're a comic book reviewer, I may be talking about you, I may not. If you take offense, my bad. But it's not going to change anything. I don't read comic reviews because the majority of people writing comic book reviews have no idea how a comic is put together. Zero idea how a comic book is put together. They might understand that the writer writes a script, then it goes to the artist, and the artist draws some pages, and then it goes to an inker, and then to a colorist, and then maybe to a letter, and then an editor, and it goes back, and maybe there's some changes, and then it goes back, and then it gets printed, and then you get it. Okay? That's what a comic book reviewer might know. But think about this. Even if you're not a reviewer, if you're a reader who likes to read reviews, when was the last time you read a comic book review that actually discussed why a writer or an artist picked a particular page layout and why that layout works or does not work for that particular page. When was the last time you read a review of a comic book in which the reviewer discussed color theory? I guarantee you, most reviewers don't even know what color theory is. How many times have you seen in a review the reviewer talk about the lettering of a comic? I think in my entire life, I may have read one review of a comic that talked about lettering, and it was kind of a throwaway line. It doesn't happen. And the reason it doesn't happen is twofold. Number one, most reviewers reviewing comics don't know how comics are made. They understand the basics of how a comic is made, but they don't really know how a comic is made. Most people reading comics don't know how a comic is made. And most people don't care. Most people don't care. They just know that they go to the comic shop or they open their DCBS box or get on Comixology, and boom, there's the comic on Wednesday. That's what you care about, right? So it also kind of puts reviewers in a bad place, because really if you started talking about color theory or why a particular font was chosen or this, that, or the other, then you're going to lose your reader because they don't know what the hell you're talking about. I mean, think about when you were in school, right? If you went to school, chances are you had to take English. Mandatory course. If you're here in the U.S. I mean, if you're in another country, you might have whatever. Spanish literature, right? Portuguese literature, Chinese literature, whatever. That kind of course. You had to take that, okay? Why did you have to take that course? When you speak English, why are you taking English class? Because there's a difference between knowing something and understanding something. And you may speak it, some people better than others. You may speak the language, but do you understand how the language works? Do you understand why you couldn't say, I don't know, I can't think of an example right now, but why you couldn't say a phrase in a particular way? Why you couldn't just write everything in lowercase letters? I mean, you could. Matter of fact, I did that once for an English class, and the teacher thought it was brilliant. Maybe she didn't know enough. I don't know. But I wrote everything lowercase. You have to take those classes, right, to understand. And, of course, in those classes, you read a lot of books. Number one, to expand your knowledge of the world, but to help you understand how those things work. Right. Obviously, when a kid goes to whatever first grade English class, I don't remember if they have those, but let's say they do. If a kid goes to first grade English class, guess what? The teacher's not going to give them Shakespeare. The teacher's not going to give them Ulysses. You're not going to get The Handmaid's Tale or even older stuff, The Odyssey. You're not going to get that stuff in that class because the kid's not going to understand. Okay. You're going to get, what do they read in first grade? The Rudolph, what's his name? Not Rudolph. Whatever that big red dog is. Okay. You're going to get that. Maybe not first grade. That might be a little young for first grade. But those kind of books. And as you progress, you get more and more difficult stuff. And then if you go to college and become an English major, as I was, you're going to read some really crazy stuff. And some stuff that's deconstructionist. And that's very different. But you're going to get different kinds of things, depending on the level of understanding that you have. Now, could you read any of these things and get something out of it? Of course. Okay. Some things may be more difficult than others, right? Like if you read Shakespeare, the language is a little bit different, so it might be hard to understand. And it will definitely be hard to understand when you don't understand some of the metaphors and puns that are put in there. Because those books are freaking hilarious. Most people don't understand the humor because the language is different. And the thing is, we will never have a comics class in school. Like legit on the syllabus. There are English teachers around the country, around the world, that do graphic novels for sure. Matter of fact, friend of the show, Josh Eves, his wife is a teacher. She has taught various different comics in her class. And it goes really well because kids, for one, don't expect to be reading comics in class. And two, it is a much more, an easier to understand format because you also have the visual element to it. And I think those kids will be better for it. But most people don't have that, right? And most people don't read comics to gain some insight out of them, to have something to think about. Most people read comics just because, number one, they love superheroes, and they want to see their superheroes kick ass. But there's more to comics than that. There's more to comics than that. And you should never forget that. I understand times get hard. You can't buy, 3 million books that you want to buy. You can only afford to buy 4, 5, 10. Make those the 10 best fucking comics you can buy. And if that means that you have to drop something else that you don't enjoy anymore, then so be it. That's what you need to be doing. Don't waste your money on crappy comics. Buy the best comics you can buy. And that might be hard to do. You may not know how to do that. But I bet you have friends that can help you. I bet there's podcasts that you listen to that can help you. I'm not going to help you. I'm not. I've done the recommending books to people before thing, and I'm not doing that anymore. I mean, I recommend books on the podcast, but I will not necessarily have a conversation about it to most people. I still do sometimes, but to most people I won't. And I don't want to get into the intricacies as to why, but I just don't. So when you have this kind of thing, really truly think about what it is that's being discussed here. Batman doesn't kill. Yeah, okay, he doesn't kill now. Do you know for a fact he's never killed? Because I do. I know he's killed many times. And take that into your comic reading all the time, okay? When you read a book and you don't like it, it's fine not to like things. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't like things all the time. I don't like that I have to go to work every day, but guess what? I have to go to work. Maybe one day I won't. But for now I do, okay? You don't have to like every comic. You have to read every comic. But the stuff that you like, you should read. And the stuff you don't like, you shouldn't read. And when people make comments like this, what difference does it make to you what Zack Snyder said? Whether you agree or disagree, what difference does it make? Because when I saw this, I wasn't even going to talk about it. I saw it and I was like, cool. But then when I saw all these people talking about it, I just felt like, I got to say something about this. I mean, and this happened multiple times. What was the other one? There's Heroes in Crisis 7 came out yesterday. And people are complaining about this Wally West thing. I'm not going to go into it if you haven't read it. I'm not going to spoil it. People are talking about this Wally West thing. And I'm like, the book like literally just came out. Okay. I saw the people complaining about it Wednesday at like 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. The book was out for like an hour. Okay? Now, it's very possible that you went to, you know, you look at a comic shop in an hour, or you went on Comixology on your lunch break and read it. It's very possible. But it's an hour. Number one, why are you talking about spoilers, like, right when the book comes out? I mean, I understand that not everyone's on social media. You don't need to be on social media. I get all that stuff. But you're being that guy, right? It's like when you go to the movie theater and you have that one guy that's always, like, explaining everything to somebody, or, like, making the stupid, silly comments as every piece of action happens on the film. Like, nobody likes that guy. Just because you're hiding on the social media account doesn't make it any different. But everyone always has to, that's the problem, right? Everyone always has to have the first say and the last say. What's that skit in Portlandia? Oh, it's over. You know, the guy, there's a hipster and he's going to a coffee shop all the time. And all of a sudden, you know, like this rich guy moves into the neighborhood. He starts going to the coffee shop. And he's like, ah, I can't come to this coffee shop. It's over. So he leaves and now he works at a bike shop and, he's fixing his bike. And the rich guy comes in and buys a bike and somehow is like, oh, I'm going to start riding bikes. And the guy's like, oh, can't ride bikes anymore. It's over. And then eventually it kind of, you know, goes full circle where the little hipster guy has gotten a job where he's making a bunch of money. And the rich guy is, you know, has been in this hipster neighborhood for a while and has kind of become a hipster himself. And so the guy that used to be the hipster is drinking coffee or whatever it was, eating a sandwich. And he waves at the guy and, you know, now he's all proper. He's in a suit or whatever. And the guy that used to be the rich guy and is now kind of a hipster, he's like, ugh, I can't eat sandwiches now anymore. It's over. It's interesting how that works, right? Yeah. Interesting how that works. So what I'm saying is don't be that guy. Okay. I mean, maybe you don't have any friends that you need to go on social media and just start blurring out bullshit out of your mouth. That's possible. But, you know, get a friend. You find your con friend. Here's what you do. You take all your idiot friends that you complain to, about stuff with, and you don't go to the con where I'm at. That's what you guys should do. And don't spoil stuff before it happens. I mean, goddamn. How many people are reading still from a shop? Most people, right? How many people get mail-order books? A lot of people. Some people won't even read this for a week and you're talking about it. Not only that, it's issue 7. This is, what, a 12-issue series? With all the stuff that's happened in this book in 7 issues, you're telling me that the reveals of this one, by the way, there's been reveals in every single issue that end up not being necessarily true to the overall story. You think this is any different? You guys remember when Cap became the Hydra Cap? He was a Nazi. He said Hail Hydra. And everyone was up in arms and then that lasted like an issue. Because it was explained in the next one as to why that happened. Yeah, I remember that very well because it's exactly the same thing as this. People don't learn. People don't learn. They just act. Now, before I start going into some weird human psychology thing that I don't want to do on this podcast, let me wrap this show up right now. If you're still listening, thank you. My apologies for being away for a couple weeks. I want to thank Dustin for continuing to do the Comic Talk headlines. I know the majority of you stayed listening to the podcast, so thank you. If you're back as of this episode, then thank you as well. You can, of course, find me on Twitter at Geekvine. You can email me, yell@comictalk.today. You don't have to yell, but I just like the email. It's funny. And that's it. I don't know if I'll be back tomorrow, but I think Dustin's back tomorrow with the headlines. I might be back this weekend. I haven't decided yet. But if not, I'll be back on Monday for sure. In fact, let me take care of that out of the way. So, originally I wanted to do the show a couple times a week. And then, for some reason, I ended up doing it every day of the week. And I kind of got burnt out a little bit. So, that's part of the reason why I haven't been really doing the show for a couple weeks. I need to take a break. I want to make sure that when I do this show, it's something that I really love and enjoy doing. And I think some of the stuff that I was bringing into the show, I really like doing, but it really is a lot of work. And my schedule is very tight. So I'm going to be changing the podcast again a little bit. There's going to be a lot more of this free form kind of thing. I'm still going to talk about comics that are coming out and things like that, but I want this to be more about just stuff that flows out of my head, as this episode was. So if you don't like that kind of thing on the show, by all means, you can unsubscribe. It's not going to hurt my feelings. But it's the stuff that I enjoy the most, and the stuff that I feel is most pertinent to people, right? And that could be just my personal preference. I know that when I listen to podcasts, what I want is a good personality on the host that I listen to, and I want it to feel like what they're saying is true, right? Even if it's not, but I want it to feel like what they're saying is true. I want it to be real. I want it to be real. And, a lot of shows, do outlines and they script their shows. And if you're one of those shows, by all means, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, for example, the most fun I have on a podcast is with Nick on Nerdy Legion. And the reason for that is, we literally don't know what we're going to talk about until the second it comes out of our mouths, right? And yes, you do need some kind of, rapport with that person in order to be able to feed off each other that way. And yes, we're friends, and so that helps. But I mean, basically that shows two friends BSing with each other and we record it, right? But the way just my brain works, it's easier for it to just come out. And I've tried to do outlines on the show before. I've tried to write scripts before, and it's not the way I work. So I want to do more of this, right? That's why I kind of gave the news to Dustin. I just, reading news is fine. I still do it, but, most news to me is kind of dry. There's not enough in there that I can talk about, but there are a few things that I think are interesting because there's kind of underlying context, that could lead to interesting conversations. And as I said in this episode, I want people to be smarter, right? And to learn to think outside of the box a little bit. So, you're going to have a lot more free form content like this one. So again, if you like that kind of content, great. Stick around. If you don't, there's plenty of other podcasts around. So, you can listen to those. But, again, thanks for listening. Let me know what you thought about the show. Let me know what you think about these changes. And that's it. I'll be back on the next one.